Understanding of our families and our family, a series called Family Portraits, and the different relationships that we have, the difficulty of the relationships. And the first week we talked about this idea that we need to move from being in fake, pseudo, not real relationships to being in real ones that requires us to walk through the tunnel of chaos. Last week we were talking, somebody wants to actually get us a tunnel of chaos. I'm afraid I would not be able to make it through the tunnel of chaos because it would be too small. I'm not sure what it would look like, but I don't know where we would put it either. So we don't have a tunnel, but something also made a comment. Well, the tunnel I'm in always makes me back. It has a detour in it. So I don't know how we would illustrate that. But we have this idea that we need to be able to walk through to get to real relationships. We have to actually walk through difficult times, and that's this idea of going through chaos to get there. We have to go through it or we can't actually make it to real relationships. So we talked about men last week. We talked about the pitfalls they have because of the curse of sin in our lives as men. If we can read in Genesis chapter 3 about that curse, men struggle with things because of that. We struggle with our pride because we believe we can do it on our own. We don't need anybody, especially a God crutch, to get ourselves there. That's the bane of our existence as men. It's what the world portrays. We also struggle with this idea of dominion. God tells us that we were to, you know, take dominion over the earth, but then we kind of took that too far, which leads us down to places that we should never go, where we lust and desire after things that are really not ours to begin with. And so the men struggle with that. And so today, I want to talk about the women. So we got finished with our service last week, and I don't even know if we were out of the building yet. And my wife looks at me and goes, well, that was really good, but what are you going to do next week? Because you're not a woman. She goes, you need to have a woman speak. And I said, okay, then you should do it. And she said, okay. So, in just a few minutes, Beth's going to join me up here and help me with today's sermon. So, she's never done that. She's taught school before in front of college kids, but she's never actually done this before. So, you guys be in prayer for her as she comes up here in a few minutes. But I want to help us get there before she comes. So if you'll turn in your book, in your Bibles, to Genesis chapter 3, we will look back over the curse that the women struggle with. So if you remember in Genesis chapter 3, the serpent had tricked them, had made them into believing they could actually eat of the fruit that God told them not to, and that they wouldn't actually die. Even though God told them they would actually die, He tricked them into believing they would actually be like God. And so after that, God comes down to walk with them, just as He did on a regular basis with them in the garden. What an awesome relationship that had to have been, to actually walk in the garden physically with God. Because they sinned, though, there was a curse. So the women's curse starts in verse 16. So let's read that together. It says, to the woman he said, I will greatly increase your pains in childbearing. With pain you will give birth to children. You will desire your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. So very short. Very short, but I think very to the point. Now, the curse had two parts to it. There's the childbearing part, and then there's a relational part. The first one, I think, is just painfully obvious, and we'll break through this in a little bit with Beth. But it's now going to hurt to have a child. Now, I was there when Maggie was born, but in the wonderful world of the 21st century, we have drugs that puts away a lot of that pain. But after the drugs wear off, it still hurts. It's still painful. So obviously there was something different about the blessing and the curse. So if you actually look in Genesis chapter 1, 28, it actually talks about this idea of childbirth, this idea of bearing children. It says verse 28 in Genesis chapter 1, it said, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature moves on the ground. So he's blessing them. So there's something different about the blessing of childbirth and the curse of the pain of childbirth. It wasn't there before. But because of sin, pain entered into this idea of bearing children. And I think it goes beyond, and we'll see in just a few minutes, it goes beyond just the actual physical giving birth. And you ladies probably already know that. So the second curse was this. He says in verse 16, it says, "You will desire, your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you." So this is, all of a sudden there's this breakdown between man and woman. This desire is being broken down. Now, if you read Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, after he creates Adam, he then puts Adam to sleep because there's not a suitable helper anywhere to be found for him. So God creates woman so he can be his helper. So in then 24 it says, after all of that happens, it says, "For this reason a man will leave his father and his mother and will be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh." Now, there's obviously a sexual understanding there, a you got to have sex to have a kid kind of understanding, but there's something deeper than that. They would become one. They'll become unified. They'll actually be as if they were just one person. And that's different than what you see in chapter 3. All of a sudden, you will desire, your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. All of a sudden, this relationship, this idea of being unity, will begin to break down. Your relationship with your husband will be different because of the sin in both of your lives. And so God then begins to want to repair that idea. If you read the book of Hosea chapter 2, we talked about Hosea, we haven't preached out of it, but Hosea is a prophet who actually has to live out his sermon illustration in his life. If you go read Hosea, I would never want to be this prophet. God actually says, go find an adulterous wife. That's what he tells him to do. Because the adulterous wife you have will be an illustration of the relationship I have with the people of Israel. So then Hosea has to live out this tumultuous, painful, your wife is sleeping with other men, prostitute kind of relationship he has. And actually in Hosea chapter 2, verse 16, God says, whenever I call Israel back to myself, it says, "You'll no longer call me master. You will call me husband." And so this idea that no longer will the woman have to be subjugated to the man. There will actually be this putting this relationship back together in unity. So it was never supposed to be this one on top of the other, putting your thumb down on the other person. Never was supposed to be that way. But because of sin, it broke down. So ladies, that is the curse that came down because of sin that we all have to live through because of the sin with the man, the sin with the woman. And these curses are actually the antithesis, the opposite of how God had set things up in the garden before sin happened. So there's pitfalls. We talked about the men's pitfalls last week of pride and lust and dominion over things. So the women have pitfalls as well. And this is where I want Beth to come up and help me. So everybody please say yay for Beth. Yay for... You guys are so literal. Yay for Beth. Y'all are awesome.
Yeah, you ever just want to stick your foot in your mouth after you say something?
Yeah, this is it for you, right?
Exactly.
This is all good until you walked up right in this moment, right?
Okay.
Deep breath. Okay. All right. By the way, we're coordinated this morning. We're husband and wife ministry team, denim. Brown. We totally did that on purpose.
For Bryn.
Just for you, Bryn. Okay. So there's pitfalls we worked through, I believe, that come from this idea of the curse. And we're going to start with this idea of childbearing. That children, this is funny to say, are a double-edged sword. They bring pain and they bring joy. Physically, they bring pain, but emotionally, and they bring pain other ways too as well. So Beth can help us. And so this is where I'm no longer giving you any kind of authority because I have none, because I'm not a woman. We'll let Beth do that.
So we're talking about children being a double-edged sword, and we will have pain with our children. As mothers, we'll have pain with our children. You know, we have a 5-year-old little girl, and she's wonderful, and she's creative, and she's funny, and she's dramatic, and she causes so much drama in our house all the time. There's always something going on because she's upset that her socks don't match her shoes that day. You know, there's always something going on. She can drive me literally crazy. She wants to be right next to me 24 hours a day, but she's pushing me away at the same time. I mean, it just causes a lot of angst, even though she's a blessing, you know?
Yeah, and I don't understand why it drives Beth crazy. I just tell her to go away. Right, guys? I mean, thanks, guys, for clapping. Because it's different. It's different for us guys than it is for them. For whatever reason, ladies, it's built different for you than it is for me. I just say, go put on your clothes. I don't care what they look like. But for them, it's different.
Or with also that children are a double-edged sword, that we want children, and we long for children if we don't have them as a, you know, we longed for Maggie. We didn't have a hard time getting pregnant with Maggie, but you guys know our struggles with adoption and fostering. And, you know, we've had children in our house and now they're gone and now we have Patrick and, but we don't know how long he's going to be there. And we don't know what the situation's going to be with him. And a lot of women struggle with that. We struggle with wanting to have children. We struggle with the, with infertility. We struggle with that desire to have a house full of kids. And it's a deep longing. It's a longing that can't even be described. Like, I can remember feeling like my arms hurt because I didn't have a baby in them. You know, you have this desire to have kids, even though they drive you absolutely insane after you have them, and you know that, but you have this, like, intense, you know, like, you know, how we all fight over when a baby comes into the church. We want that that feeling of that baby next to us.
Right. Okay. So you also talked about the pride that you struggle with it.
Right.
Again,
we
find, I don't struggle with as much as
right. We find pride in our kids as well. We find pride in who our kids are. And we struggle with that issue of control. Most of Maggie and my fights are about clothing. They and they've been that way since she was 18 months old. She's had an opinion about what she wanted to wear and how she was going to wear it and how she was going to wear her clothes and her hair. And I struggle.
Which is going to be terrible at 15.
I know. Yeah. But I struggle with that because it's like, why do I care what she, why do I care about that? But it's a pride thing. We want our kids to look good as they go out the door. We want them to, their bows to match their hair, to match their shoes. We want them to look a certain way because they in some way represent who we are. Because we, you know, I was thinking about it as we were, I was waiting for her to come out of kindergarten the other day, and all the moms as we were waiting there were all like, you know, wearing sweatpants and our hair's barely combed, and, but these girls and boys come out and they look perfect because we find pride in who they are and what they look like, and we find pride in our children's accomplishments and how they're doing in school and how they're doing in their sports, or, you know, if they're at the head of the class, or, you know, we find pride in those things. We also struggle with their behavior in public. What if your child goes to Walmart and throws herself on the ground because you're not going to get her that Barbie doll? You know, then everybody in the store is looking at you, right? Because your child is throwing a huge fit on the floor because you're not giving them what they want. And so we automatically take that on. Whereas it could just be that she's having a bad day and she's acting like a brat because she's being a brat. But we take it in internally like, oh, my gosh, I'm such a bad mom. I can't believe she's acting like this. We find all that pride and a lot of our, you know, a lot of us comes from what our kids are doing.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure I never thought that. Maggie's screaming, is put her under your arm and walk out, right? It's like,
it's and like, then I call you crying. I can't believe
exactly.
You call, this
she time. Acted like that. I'm like, it doesn't matter, you know. But that's you guys struggle with that.
Yeah.
So the first thing, this idea that because of the sin, children cut both ways. For you guys, for you ladies especially. So the second thing we thought about as well is this idea of there's a lack of fulfillment. Because of the sin in our lives, there's a lack of fulfillment for women especially. So
right, and part of the curse says that you will desire your husband, but fulfillment can't come from our husbands. It can't come from, even though it's a source that we turn to, if we're married, we turn to our husbands or you know, we want that. We want our husbands to desire us. We want our husbands to go back to that time when we were dating and you would just spend hours talking to each other and looking in each other's eyes. And
I'm pretty sure that never happened.
Yeah. It did.
Oh, did it? Okay. Well, I'm glad it happened for you.
But we want them to desire us. We want them to want us, to want to be around us and to think that we're just the most wonderful things in the whole wide world. And but what if they don't? What if they, you know, what if you're having issues in your relationship? Or what if, you know, all of a sudden you have an infant and a five-year-old and you're both working and, you know, all those things. You're not going to just spend time just, you know, gazing in each other's eyes.
Gazing, yes.
So that lack of fulfillment. Okay, so what if, so if it doesn't come from your husbands and your kids, where else do we find that fulfillment? Where are some other places that we find fulfillment? We find it in other people. We find it in our friends, in our relationships with other women. I was thinking about last night because I went to Tanya's house last night for a girls' night out, and, you know, everybody was all dressed up, and we were all, like, you know, looking nice. And I thought, why do we get dressed up to see each other, you know? But there's this, you know, you have to, you know, we want that fulfillment in other relationships with women.
Yeah, I always find it interesting, too. And sometimes I sit at the coffee shop down the street, and several ladies will come in and have coffee together. And I have to put my earplugs in and listen to music because I can't stand to listen to them talk. Because it's constantly, well, my husband doesn't know. He does blah, 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 blah. And my husband doesn't know either. Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh, I don't want to hear what you're saying. It drives me crazy that you guys sit around and do that. But, hey, more power to you. You don't do that, of course.
Yeah,
never do you do that.
So if we can't find fulfillment in those places, do we find it with other men? I mean, are we having inappropriate relationships with other men? What about food? This is one that I'm like, oh, I can't really talk about this one because this one hits too close to home. But, you know, we find that fulfillment in food. You know, we find that fulfillment in that good piece of chocolate. You know, that desire, and we need to be filled up. And so are we just filling it up with other things like food, like watching TV for hours on end? Another one that I was like not wanting to talk about was the internet. You know, how many hours a day do I spend surfing the internet and writing on Facebook and commenting on things so that I look funny to my friends, you know? Those kinds of things. We are trying to fill ourselves up because we're not finding that fulfillment somewhere else.
Yeah, and also that this is not just a married woman's issue. You know, obviously, number one, you know, if you don't have children because you're not married or whatever, just beyond that, there's a lack of fulfillment regardless of childbearing, regardless of being married. We look for fulfillment somewhere.
Right.
And if it's not in a husband or in a child, where is it that you're looking for that fulfillment? Right. So then the last thing then I think leads into the lack of fulfillment, then struggle, the women begin to struggle with their identity.
So if we can't find our fulfillment in our friends, and we can't find it in our children or our husbands or other relationships, where is it? Because Maggie and Patrick are cute, but they're not going to, you know, Maggie's going to go to college someday. Patrick could leave tomorrow to go to another foster home. You know, all those things are going to leave. Stephen is awesome and he's great and everything, but he cannot fulfill every need that I have. And food doesn't do it either. And that's one that I really struggle with too, that, I mean, the food is, you know, it's not going to fill me up. So where is my identity then? Who are you as a woman? Is it in your job? Is it that you find your identity in the title behind your name, that you can do this or you do this? But what if you don't have a job? Or what if you lose your job? Or what if you're a stay-at-home mom? Then where does your identity come from if it's not from your job? Or maybe your identity comes from your role in the community, like volunteering on every committee. Do you sign your name up on every committee at every school function because, you know, you want to be that mom that does it all, you know? Or are you volunteering so that you're taken away from other areas in your life? And the last one was struggling with our identity. Is it in your church? Do you find your identity in your church, in your role at church, what you do at church, what church you belong to? And, you know, all those things, they're all good things. They're all good things, but they can't fill you up.
So then the pitfalls that we think we understand that from this curse is that women, our children are a struggle. They're a blessing, but they're also a struggle that you guys struggle with. And then there's this idea of a lack of fulfillment that leads to your struggle with your identity. Where does that come from? Who are you as a woman? Who are you really as a woman? And so we found a passage of scripture we want to go over, which I think is funny and difficult and sad all at the same time, but really illustrates, I think, this point very well. It's found in Genesis chapter 16, so it's just a few chapters over. And actually the kids today are studying this very passage as well, which I thought was pretty cool. So in chapter 16, we see this relationship between, now it's Sarai and Abram. Their names have not been changed yet, but it's Sarah and Abraham are the people that we're talking about, if you're familiar with their story in Scripture at all. But God has given Abram a promise to be a great nation, that God will raise up a people out of from Abram. And He has promised this, but now things are going not quite as to what they think their plan is, should be going. And things are going along. They can't have a child. 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 Things are getting a little too close for comfort. They're getting a little too old to be having children. And Sarah and Abraham begin to worry about that. So they come up with a great idea. And actually Sarah comes up with this great idea. And it's found in chapter 16 of Genesis. So we're just going to read it together, and then we'll break it down. So it says, "Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So she said to Abram, 'The Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with your maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her.' Abram agreed to what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant, Hagar, and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant," talking about Hagar, she began to despise her mistress, Sarai. Then Sarai said to Abram, 'You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now that she knows she is pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me.' 'Your servant is in your hands,' Abram said. 'Do with her whatever you think best.' And Sarai mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, 'Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from, and where are you going?' 'I'm running away from my mistress Sarai,' she said. Then the angel of the Lord told her, 'Go back to your mistress and submit to her.' The angel added, 'I will so increase your descendants that they will be too numerous to count.' The angel of the Lord also said to her, 'You are now with child, and you will have a son, and you shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand against him. And he will live in hostility toward all his brothers.' And she gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her, 'You are the God who sees me.' For she said, 'I have now seen the one who sees me.' That is why the well was called Beer La-Roi. It is still there between Kadesh and Bered. So Hagar bore Abram a son. Abram gave him the name Ishmael to the son she had born. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore him Ishmael." Now, do you hear the comedy in that at all? So Sarah wanted a child. She can't have one. She can't be patient enough to wait on God's plan. So she came up with this great idea. And let me tell you, Abram wasn't going to say no, was he? I mean, your wife says, "Here, have another woman. Happy birthday." I mean, who does that? But she did. So she wanted a child, right? So she did this double-edged sword. She wanted a child so bad that she was willing to allow her husband to have another wife. Another woman besides her.
Right, and she had been promised that she would have that child, but she just couldn't wait on God's timing. That we struggle with, that we want it now. We don't want to wait.
Right, so she wanted a child. She couldn't wait on God. She saw herself as a failure, most likely. Right? She saw herself as a failure as a woman. Somehow that she can't be fulfilled as a woman because she can't do what she's supposed to be able to do. So she usurped God's plan. She stepped right in there.
Right. And so she thought that fulfillment would come in a child, and she didn't want to wait on God's plan. So
the child came. Well, I guess the pregnancy came first. Right? And so as soon as Hagar is pregnant, a cat fight ensues.
And
right?
So, So I think that's so funny that as soon as she finds out she's pregnant, then Hagar's like, oh, look what I got. You know, like she automatically starts taunting Sarah with, like, I have what you can't have.
It's all over this idea that my identity is built in the fact that I can have kids and you can't. Look at what I can do and you can't do it. See, I can do what a woman's supposed to do and you can't do it. So she's built her own self. Hagar's even actually built herself up in being able to do that.
And then the best thing is that then Sarah blames it on her husband.
Which is brilliant. Because he's not going to say no. I mean, come on.
She goes to him in verse 5 and says, Sarah says to Abram, it's all your fault. Now this servant of mine is pregnant and she despises me. Though I gave her the privilege of sleeping with you, the Lord will make you pay for doing this to me. So she immediately blames Abram, even though it was her idea.
Yeah, so it was like something like, you just should have said no.
Yeah, you should have loved me
enough
to say no.
You should have known better this was going to happen. And so Abram said, no, I'm not going to deal with it. She's yours.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I don't know anything.
She's your problem. I'm not going to mess around with this. You guys go do your own thing. And so then Sarai begins to harm her, belittle her, hurt her, to the point where she has to run away. Hagar has to run away because of that. And is hurt. And then all the crazy part about the whole thing. And if you read the passage there where God is talking to Hagar about what her son is going to do. Verse 11, the angel of the Lord also says to her, you are now with child. You shall name him, he will be a son. You shall name him Ishmael. For the Lord has heard of your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him, and he will live in hostility toward all his brothers. Now, who are his brothers? His father is Abraham, the father of Israel. Ishmael is not the father of Israel. Ishmael is the other. We today live in conflict over all of the Middle East because of that right there. Isn't that overwhelming to think about that? Because Sarai cannot handle the fact that she cannot bear children. Their identity is wrapped up in this idea that you're my husband and this is what I'm supposed to do for you. And it has nothing to do. She's totally put God to the side completely.
She's lacking her fulfillment somewhere and she thinks that this baby
this is going to
fill it up.
And all it does is cause generations of pain. Generations of fighting. Generations of brother killing brother over a little piece of dirt. So it's all you girls' fault. That's just basically the point. Just kidding.
That's not the point.
That's not the point?
No, that's not
that's
the
what
point.
I wrote right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Sarah's lack of patience, her lack of hope in God's plan, the lack of her ability to see her significance is beyond her kids, beyond her husband, is actually built in what God is doing through her. Because she can't wait. She loses her faith, she loses her hope. Now, later, she does conceive. If you go read that story, she actually laughs at God. If you go read that story, two men come, I think it's two or three men come, to tell her that she's going to become pregnant, and she literally laughs at them. Like, you're crazy. Because it's years later. I think Abraham was 99, and he's 86 at this point, so it's years later that they finally conceive. And she's like, I don't believe it. I have no more hope that it's going to happen. So she laughs at them. So she loses her hope. She loses her faith. So, then our thought then was, where do you women find your hope? Where do you find your faith and your love? And so we went through and we talked about, we actually came upon this separately, and which I thought was cool, and then we came together and worked through it. But it's in Proverbs chapter 31 that we want to talk about. What it means for you guys to be godly women. And if you've read it, I'm sure you've read it before, if you've been around the Bible before, it's a very well-known passage. But it's in Proverbs chapter 31, starting in verse 10.
You're able to
Just a sec. Okay. You hear the pages ruffling. They're not there yet. It's an old pastor's trick. You hear the papers ruffling.
We were reading through some of this stuff, and I hope I'm not going ahead a little bit too much.
No, go ahead.
But that this is the idealized woman, that no woman can do all of these things, and it doesn't have to be just a woman who is married or has babies or anything like that. It's just a woman who kind of idealizes all of the different parts of what a noble woman is.
All right, so Beth's going to read all of Proverbs 31. She's got a New Living Translation. And then we're not going to break all of it apart, but we'll break a few pieces out that we think applies to all women when it comes to their identity and where they find their hope.
Okay.
So she's going to read Proverbs 31, 10 through 31.
Chapter 10, verse 10 says, "Who can find a virtuous and capable wife? She is worth more than precious rubies. Her husband can trust her, and she will greatly enrich his life. She will not hinder him, but help him all her life. She finds wool and flax and busily spins it. She is like a merchant ship. She brings her food from afar. She gets up before dawn to prepare breakfast for her household and prepare the day's work for the servant girls. She goes out to inspect a field and buys it. With the earnings, she plants a vineyard. She is energetic and strong, a hard worker. She watches for bargains. Her lights burn late into the night. Her hands are busy spinning thread, her fingers twist fiber. She extends a helping hand to the poor and opens her arms to the needy. She has no fear of winter for her household because all of them have warm clothes. She quilts her own bedspreads. She dresses like royalty in gowns of finest cloth. Her husband is well known, for he sits in the council meeting with the other civic leaders. She makes belted linen garments and searches to sell to the merchants, and sashes to sell to the merchants. She is clothed with strength and dignity, and she laughs with no fear of the future. When she speaks, her words are wise, and her kindness is the rule when she gives instructions. She carefully watches all that goes on in her household and does not have to bear the consequences of laziness. Her children stand and bless her. Her husband praises her. There are many virtuous and capable women in the world, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive, and beauty does not last, but a woman who fears the Lord will be greatly praised. Reward her for all she has done. Let her deeds publicly declare her praise."
So we found a good place where there's a good kind of commentary that breaks this apart. We have copies of that on the table out in the lobby. If you'd like to have a copy of that, you're welcome to take one. Men and women both, you're welcome to take one. We only have about 20 copies, but if you'll take one if you'd like. But we want to break a few of the verses out here that I think applies to all women. There are some of the things that maybe you wouldn't be good at. Maybe you can't quilt your own bedspread like it talked about. But there are some things in here, I think, that help all people understand what it means to be wise and to be a woman who finds faith in who God is. And the first one is going to be kind of all over the place. It's not in order. But the first one is in 26. Verse 26, it says, "She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue." This idea to be a woman who doesn't find her identity wrapped up in the curse that happened because of the fall, that you actually be a woman of wisdom, a woman who actually has faithful instruction on her tongue. If you read Titus chapter 2, it actually tells women, when Paul is instructing Titus about women in the church, it tells women that women used to instruct other women. Older women instruct the young women on what it means to be faithful, wives, daughters, mothers.
Yeah, that's something that I really appreciate about this church. In other churches we've been in before, there hasn't been the multi-generational part of it. It's just been all people our age. And in our Bible study, there are other women there that I can ask for guidance about things. And there's other, like, because you've been through other parts of your life, you know, and so you know what we're going through. And, like I always think about Sandy Tapley coming over and helping me plant a garden in the backyard. I had no idea how to do that, but I knew I wanted to. And so she came over and instructed me. And I think that's living out that Titus part, is that we want you guys to teach us what we're supposed to be doing and how to do things.
Right.
You have wisdom.
You have wisdom. And to be wise and to be help other people along with that. So helping other women find and understand that you don't have to be wrapped up in these things. They don't have to be your identity. God is your identity. We'll see that in just a second. The second one is in verse 23. And you might not get this, but this is kind of where we pulled out of there. It says, her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes his seat among the elders of the land. I think this, her husband was respected. And the reason why it says that about her husband while she's there is because of her behavior. Because of what she does. Now, Sarah is busy giving her husband to other women and then beating him up over it. But this woman here is successful. Her husband is successful because she's wise. She handles things on her own. She doesn't blame things on her husband when truly it was her own fault in Sarah's case.
We thought it was funny, and this was a point that we read on that commentary, was that this woman, who's this idealized woman in Proverbs 31, she couldn't just call her husband in the middle of the day to ask him his opinion on things because there were no phones. But that he was at the city wall doing his business, and she was at home taking care of things at home and making sure that her business was running well, and her maid servants were doing well. And so she had the day to day. She ran the household. She was the keeper of everything that was going on in the home, all her vineyards and everything. And so she didn't have to rely. She couldn't call her husband, and he trusted her to run things well.
Right, and I think that also helps us understand that it's not supposed to be this male dominated, only males can do things. If you go to the Middle East today, Noah's about to go to Saudi Arabia, and he's going to be there for a year working with the army. And he's already told me that they have to let all of their Saudi counterparts go home at noon. Because they have to go drive their women to the store, to the market, because they're not allowed to drive. They're not allowed to actually do things for themselves. Now that's what the curse would want us to believe, right? The curse would want us to believe that the man's dominating, that the woman is unable to do things, that the woman is not being able to fend for herself. That is the drastic understanding of that curse. And they're living it out today. In 2009, they're living that out. But if you see, the Scripture is completely different from that. Even in this time, even in the times where this was written, where people put women down, that this woman actually had a job. That this woman actually made money. She had a business. That her husband was actually honored because of what she did. And that's different from what I think the curse is supposed to be telling us. That the world tells us that it's not. It's a male-dominated world. Now, I know we live in a women's liberated movement type of society now, and things have been beginning to change and move in. But women are still not getting paid the same, are they? No, because men are smarter than you.
I'm just gonna go sit down.
No, you're done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Just kidding. But that's what we're led to believe. That's what we're understanding. But it's so different than that. So we thought this was really good, this idea that the husband is respected. Well, it's talking about the woman. Why is the husband respected? It's because of who she is. She's comfortable with who she is. And she's wise because she's able to do those things. So that's our second one. And our third one then is in Proverbs 20 and 15 both. But she takes care of other people. In verse 20 it says, she opens her arms to the poor and she extends her hands to the needy. She's actually willing to go and she serves other people. That this woman isn't about, she finds her identity in what God is having her to do, and she doesn't get completely wrapped up and bogged down in the things that she has at home.
Right, it's more than just, writing your check to the right organization. It's going out there and visiting the sick and comforting the lonely and taking care of the people who need help, the poor and the needy.
And then verse 15 is in contrast to what Sarah did. It says she gets up while it's still dark. She provides food for her family and portions for her servant girls. So that's different what Sarah did. What did Sarah do to her servant girl? She badgered her. She got angry with her. She beat her until she ran away. This woman not only provides for the poor, she provides for her family, but she understands that even the people that are supposed to be serving her are also under her care. That she actually cares about other people beyond herself.
Right, and that she's a good manager of everything that's going on in her realm of responsibility, including even the lowest of her responsibilities.
Right. And then the verse 30, which I think there's two good points out of this verse. Verse 30, it says, "Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised." She understands that what the world counts as valuable is really truly not valuable at all. Talks about this idea of beauty and charm. The things that you that the world teaches you that's going to be valuable for you, those are not what are valuable. What's valuable is your relationship with God. She's concerned about what God thinks rather than what other people think. Now that's a tough one, right? Especially when you're in Walmart and your five-year-old's screaming at the top of their lungs. You care about everybody else that's watching at that moment.
Right, but you have to be secure in the fact that you know that you're trying to do your best with what you're given. And even if you're not looking pretty at that point, that you're still going to, you're still, you know, a child of God. We're still, you know, His beloved child.
Yeah, so she puts God's first. She puts God first. Verse 30, she says, it says that a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. It is her key to this whole idea. It's key to this understanding of how do women get back at the curse? How do they get away from what the curse is teaching them, which is that you're going to be dominated by your children and you're going to be dominated by your husband. That's what the curse says. But a woman who gets away from that, who begins to understand that, understands that what God thinks is more important than anybody else, including her husband, including her children. And she is determined by what God's will is in her own life. What are you going to say?
That she just recognizes her need for God. That she recognizes that that's the most important thing. That at some point our beauty will go away and we won't be, you know, all clever and say cute things on Facebook. But that it's, you know, that our need is in God.
I don't know. Your mom is saying cute, clever things on Facebook. So you got another at least 20 more years to do. She's not here, so I can make fun of her.
She'll listen to this.
She'll listen to this one?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That's okay. So, ladies, in your relationships, where is your identity? What is the tunnel for you guys to walk through? What are the things that you find your identity? What do you wrap yourself up in that is truly not who you are? I believe that's what it is for you ladies to deal with, to struggle with, to battle with. And how do you find your identity like this woman in Proverbs did? That she understands that she puts God first above all things. That she doesn't get disillusioned like Sarah did. She doesn't get hung up on what's going on in her life with her kids. Get hung up on what's going on in life with her husband. That she begins to truly understands that God is first. Whether she's married, single, single mom, all of those things. That she puts God first above all things. And it's what this Proverbs 31 woman shows us, that she does that thing. And because she does, it puts it last in the Scripture. It's verse 30 of 31. But that is the key to all the other things that are going on in her life. She's able to do those things because she puts God first. And she understands that she finds her identity, her fulfillment, her hope in Christ and Him first. So our team is going to come and we're going to sing the song, "My Hope is in You." We just sang it a few minutes ago. We're going to sing it again. Please remember, if you'd like a handout that kind of expands on the Proverbs 31 further, you're welcome to it. It's in the lobby. I know the reason why I had Beth come up and help with this, because if I were to say all that, you'd be like, "Yeah, whatever, Stephen, you're a guy, you don't get it." And that's okay. I don't have to get it. But I do know for a fact that all the struggles we deal with women and all the struggles we deal with as men, they're real. And next week we're going to talk about them coming together in a marriage and what happens when you bring the guy's curse and the woman's curse together. And what happens then? And what the Scriptures actually say about that and actually becoming new again, as Christ talks about in the New Testament. about how we can become new and whole. It can be true in your own individual lives as women, as men, but also in your married lives as well. So let's pray together. I want to pray for you specifically as women, and then we'll sing together. Father, right now,